This is a special report from ABC Radio News.
I'm a professional officer, or at least I hope to be, and it's a little different for me than it is for the person who is aiming his career in the civilian life.
And so what the country's interest is right now, and what the country's interest is my interest too. And if there's a job to be done over there, and apparently we think there is a job to be done, and gotta do it.
We're defending the liberty and the freedom of, or trying to help a people defend their liberty and their freedom.
Those are the voices of three young Americans commissioned today as lieutenants in the Army of the United States of America. Three young men who, with 576 others, graduated today from the United States Military Academy. Those three and 95 others have volunteered for duty in Vietnam. This is an ABC Radio News special report on those men and their classmates who today joined the ranks of the long gray line of West Point. At West Point, ABC Radio News correspondent Ted Koppel and Cadet Reg Moore describe the events of West Point's June week, yesterday and today, as the Long Gray Line 1966 passed in review.
The band has just finished trooping the line. All finished. It's no place like home, home sweet home.
So in about 3 minutes, you just had a capsulized version of what the cadet goes through in 4 years. Leaves home, spends 4 years here, and goes back. It makes it sound so simple, doesn't it?
That's why, as you know, a lot of them won't be going right back home.
Indeed. There are going to be, 98 of them who are heading out to Vietnam?
Yes, that's right.
And eventually, I guess most of the Corps will be going out there.
Yes. We all know that we're supposed to spend at least one tour during our 4 years in Vietnam.
So basically, it's just a matter of time. The 98 cadets who volunteered will be going out, I guess, as soon as they get their training done with.
Yes, but that will be a good 8 to 10 months though.
Among the cadets on the plane at West Point were three young men chosen by ABC to speak for the 96 graduating officers who have volunteered for duty in Vietnam. Ted Koppel interviewed the three cadets.
My name is Arthur Grant. I'm from Drexel Hill, Pennsylvania. I'm going armor, and I'm a cadet lieutenant.
My name is David Brown. I'm from Riverside, California. I went infantry, and I'm a cadet lieutenant.
My name is Walt Brinker. I'm from Keokuk, Iowa, and I'm going infantry. I'm a cadet lieutenant.
Now, you're all going to Vietnam, is that right? All three of you. And all of you have volunteered to go to Vietnam.
That's right.
Walt, why?
Well, there's a number of reasons. It's where the action is right now, and I kind of like to start my career off with a bang, you know, with getting some good experience in. And I think I agree with what we're doing over there. I think it's a good cause we're fighting for. And I'd like to be able to in a position to do the most I can to help it.
What are we fighting for?
For the freedom of our country and of anybody else in the world who wants to stay free, which is, I presume, is everybody.
Brown has West Point prepared you for what you think you're going to meet over in Vietnam?
To a degree only. I don't think the curriculum at the academy has changed too much to prepare us, actually prepare us for Vietnam. More of our tactical training is in counter-guerrilla operations. We spend more time in tactics trying to understand the guerrilla and why, what he's actually doing. And for instance, in the social sciences, I took a course on national security problems where you basically try to understand what the problems are in an operation like this. And we've many of our classes, international law, national security problems, we spend quite a bit of time discussing Vietnam, and not just the tactical or the military aspects of it, but there's political, cultural, educational problems, everything, and over there that they're trying to give us a broad picture of what's actually the problem over there.
Do you think you're going to have to make any political decisions while you're over there? I use that in a very broad sense.
No, I'm not going to make any political decisions, not as a second lieutenant, but it gives you an understanding of what is actually the problem over there. The problem isn't just isn't just beating the communists. That isn't our only problem over there. I mean, I can't go over there and just concentrate on fighting, because I've got to remember. I've got to understand the people and what the basic problems are, the reforms that are needed, the land problems, the political problems over there. I can't do anything about it, but I can cause problems over there. It's sort of we went through a story over in one of our courses, national security problems, about a lieutenant in Dominican Republic, who when he was going through one of the cities in the Dominican Republic, some lady dropped a can of garbage on his head, and his immediate response was he was going to open up on the whole place. And we can't. This is something you just got to basically understand what the overall problem is. Because if he had opened up, we would have caused more of a political incident.
Mr. Grant, do you think the people are with us in Vietnam?
Well, sir, I certainly hope so. I'm not really sure. I've been detached from the situation myself, and I can only arrive at my conclusions from the papers. But I would say generally they are.
Well, Mr. Brinker, if there is an election in South Vietnam, and if the communists were to win it, that possibility is not all that remote, would we still have a right to be in Vietnam?
If the communists were the legal power to be in Vietnam and they asked us to leave, we'd have to leave.
You think we would?
We'd try and probably try and find some loophole to stay there by maybe not recognizing them. But if we would recognize them as being the government in Vietnam and they asked us to leave, we have not, as far as I can see, we haven't got any alternative but to leave.
Now, one of the reasons I'm pursuing this line of question is I'd like to find out whether any of you gentlemen have any qualms whatsoever. It would appear that you don't, because you volunteered. But do you, Mr. Brinker, have any qualms whatsoever about going over to Vietnam?
No, I don't. That's what the country's interest is right now, and what the country's interest is my interest, too. And if there's a job to be done over there, and apparently we think there is a job to be done, then we've got to do it.
Well, now, you're talking about the country's interest, and I assume that you're referring to the United States. Mr. Brown was talking about the poor oppressed people of South Vietnam. Which is it? Are we fighting for ourselves, or are we fighting for them?
Both. Well, I suppose officially we're fighting for the Vietnamese. And officially and unofficially we also are fighting for them, but we're also fighting for our own interests in the long range.
Mr. Brown, one of the things that I understand the point has prepared you for, or has molded you into, is a man of upright moral standing. And I say this without any sarcasm whatsoever. I mean it quite frankly. Do you think that the 4 years here at the point, where honor and integrity and all that is good and exemplary about American life is the byword, do you think that this has sufficiently prepared you for fighting the kind of war we are fighting in Vietnam?
Yes, I think I'm prepared to fight the war over there.
It's been described, and I think quite accurately, as a dirty war.
It is a dirty war.
So you're going to have to fight dirty.
Yes, I'm going to have to fight dirty.
You're prepared to do that?
I think so. I don't really know. I won't know, I don't think, until I get over there whether I'll be able to go through with everything.
Does this trouble you at all?
Does it bother me having to fight a dirty war?
Well, I mean, have you given it some thought? Obviously, it's a major step in your life.
I think
this decision lightly.
The way I look at it, when they say that, they call it a dirty war, this is basically they're just saying it's an unconventional war. They're fighting it with unconventional and what the papers term as dirty tactics. But the Viet Cong are fighting with those tactics, and that's the only way we can beat them is using our own tactics. And I don't think I'll have any qualms in using those tactics against them.
Has it occurred to you that you might not come back?
Never can tell.
How about you, Mr. Brown? Have you talked about this? Have you thought about it at night when you're in bed? Or are you too tired to think about anything when you finally get to bed?
No, I've thought about it quite a bit. I don't know I love life. I'm afraid to die, I guess. I'm actually more afraid to be maimed over there than actually die, I think. I mean, actually, if I sit down and think about it, I'm basically more afraid of getting badly maimed. But still, I just think to myself, I'm graduating from this place, and now it's my turn to, so to speak, march to the sound of the guns. And that's where they are in Vietnam. And that's where I'm going to go.
S. Brigade Commander. Flint is to band plays Army Blue, the whole class. My line, you say, is how wide would you say that was?
I beg your pardon.
How wide would you say that was? Was it 200 yards?
Oh, I would say at least 200 yards, yes. And they're how deep? About 4 or 5 deep.
Yes, they are.
2, 4, 5 deep. And they stretch 200 yards diagonally across this plain. The entire graduating class has now moved forward and are marking time to the music.
They all stopped and saluted the superintendent and commandant.
Graduating class of 1966, forward, forward.
The whole class is coming forward now, across the plain. The staffs, as you see, they're going to join their companies. They're separating from their small groups and they're going into their regular companies that they came out of at the beginning of the year.
Well, this must be a pretty satisfying moment. Have you thought about this moment very often?
You think about it every year about this time. Talking all the first classes now, completely separate from the core cadets and marching times. They just stopped from the superintendent. They're in about face, and now they're facing the core cadets. They're taking off their hats and are now prepared for the passing review of the core cadets, the underclass core cadets.
Now the applause you hear in the background is for the graduating class of West Point cadets. They have just moved forward about 5 steps and have now separated themselves physically from the rest of the Corps. And this is the last time that they will march together, I guess.
That's right. They are separated from the Corps. All the staffs are going out to get in front of this line. Of course, the staffs are first classmen. And they will come forward and salute the superintendent and the commandant, who you see over on our left has just come out.
Now the commandant and the supervising staff are standing about 75 yards away from the nearest cadets, and behind those nearest cadets, there are about 15 or 20 of them, is the rest of the cadet corps, with the first yearman, as we said, about 5 steps in front of the rest of the corps.
Yes.
Some remarks will now be made by the superintendent of the academy, who will introduce the main speaker of the morning, Vice President Hubert Humphrey. The superintendent is Major General Donald V. Bennett.
We are honored today to have the Vice President of the United States, Mr. Hubert H. Humphrey.
Gentlemen, I salute you. You have completed 4 years of rigorous training of mind, body, and spirit. And your nation knows that you have done well. But I congratulate you even more on what lies ahead. For the lives of service to your country and to your fellow men. The demands on you will be great, greater than any previous generation of the long gray line that has passed proudly through this great institution. Never before has your country been so deeply linked with every part of a rapidly shrinking and changing world. The real achievements taking place within Asia have occurred in areas that rely upon freedom and independence, competition, and the respect for national integrity as the true basis for genuine and enduring social and economic progress. As we Americans, therefore, strive to deal with these immense problems and the promise of a vibrant, modernizing, interdependent Asia in the years ahead, we will be called upon to show special qualities of mind and spirit and understanding. We will have to learn far more about Asian history and Asian cultures than any of us now know. We shall need more than a nodding acquaintance with the key critical issues that absorb the attention of Asians. We will have to learn to speak and read Asian languages. We will have to become more sensitive to the differences among Asian nations as well as their similarities. And we should be sensitive to the pride and the dignity and the nationalism of Asian peoples and nations. Like most people, Asians prefer to rule themselves, even if badly, than to be well ruled by some foreigner. Asians prefer Asian initiatives. So do we. And finally, we must learn to suppress our national enthusiasm for instant solutions to age-old problems. Asia's problems are extraordinarily complex and intractable, and they will be with us for a long time to come. We must discipline ourselves to practice some traditional Asian patience. It is in persevering patience and perspective that we will need in the years ahead. And I have no doubt that we will meet in Asia, as in the rest of the world, time and again, disappointment, disillusionment, Yankee go home, ingratitude, and frustration. But we must not be deterred. We must not falter. It is our good fortune to be citizens of the most prosperous and powerful nation in the world. With that good fortune comes responsibility and duty. It is the prosperous who can most afford compassion and humility. It is the powerful who most can afford patience and perspective. To be firm without being belligerent. To be strong without being bellicose. These must be our standards. Let us then not pursue policies or judge ourselves in consonance with the passion of the moment, but rather let us pursue those courses of which, in the judgment of history, it can be written, these were the paths taken by wise men. My congratulations to this class.
There we go. That's the official West Point march in the background. The underpass is starting, passing review.
Now they're peeling off by regiments, right?
Well, actually by battalions, two battalions in a regiment. The first battalion has made a right turn completely. They'll have to go around a rectangle shaped march.
Four lines of seniors directly in front of us, stretched diagonally across this field, as Reg told you a moment ago, about 200 yards in length. And now from the opposite end of that line, the band coming down, parading in front of the seniors who are now standing here with their hats held to their chests. And following the band, the rest of the corps. And thus it has been year after year. How long, Reg?
Ever since 1802, well, not actually that long, since they didn't have parades in 1802, but it's been at least over 100 years.
It's quite a tradition. Quite a few rather famous Americans have stood here watching as the rest of the Corps passes in review in front of them. Any names come to mind?
Eisenhower. Think of MacArthur. Westmoreland.
That's right, General Westmoreland, now the commanding officer of U.S. forces in Vietnam, once stood at the same spot when he graduated from West Point.
He graduated back in the 30s.
also on that honor roll of West Point graduates spanning more than a century, Lee and Grant, Patton, Wainwright, and Stilwell, Captain Pete Dawkins and astronauts Borman and White, Blackjack Pershing and Stonewall Jackson, Mark Clark, Matthew Ridgway, and Maxwell Taylor. And today, a new roster of names added to the long gray line.
James Patrick Dugan, Jr. Thomas James McNaughton. Cameron Addison Ely. John Julius LaRoche, Jr.
The graduating class of the United States Military Academy, class of 1966. Now, officers in the armed forces of the United States. 579 graduated today. 557 will serve in the Army, 17 in the Air Force, 1 in the Navy, and 98 will go on for additional training and then to war in Vietnam.
I love life. I'm afraid to die, I guess. But still, I just think to myself, I'm graduate from this place, and now it's my turn to, so to speak, march to the sound of the guns. And that's where they are in Vietnam. And that's where I'm going to go.
The news department of the ABC Radio Network has presented The Long Gray Line, 1966, a special report on the graduating class of the United States Military Academy with Ted Koppel. Executive producer Nicholas George. Producer at West Point, John Whitmer. Audio engineering by Richard Aronson, Robert Donnelly, Marty Folia, and Ed Salzman. Directed by Dennis J. Dennehy. Produced by H. Paul Jeffers. This is Bill Brophy speaking. ABC Radio News extends its thanks for their cooperation in producing this program to Major General Donald V. Bennett, Superintendent of the United States Military Academy, Lieutenant Colonel Robert E. Krenn, Captain Fox McCarthy, Captain Alan Salisbury, Cadet Reg Moore, and the officers, men, and cadets of West Point.